Marshall.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Riley, and Judge Flory. The Honorable Tracy Smith presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This is our second and last oral argument on our calendar this morning. This case is A20-1350, Emily May Peterson versus Scott Howard Meyer, appellant. And each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. We're making an audio recording of this, and I believe we are ready to go if you are. So if you could, when you start your argument, just state your name and a party you represent for the record.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. This is, my name is Zorislav Lederman. May it please the court. I represent Scott Meyer. Mr. Meyer was a respondent in an HRO proceeding in Olmsted County. There was an HRO issued against him and in favor of Ms. Peterson. She was a petitioner. And we are appealing that decision and requesting that it be reversed. Before getting into the arguments, I want to just kind of lay out what the evidence was that was submitted to the district court, because the harassment definition talks about two or more incidents. And so sometimes it does come down to doing some math to decide whether we have two or whether it's just one. And so the evidence that kind of was considered by the district court consisted of essentially four items. Number one, we have the 2017 messages that were also the subject of the first harassment restraining order, the 2018 order. So that's kind of one body of evidence. Then we have exhibit number one, which was a message sent in October of 2019 after the criminal trial ended with regards to the HRO violation. Then we have exhibit number two, which was a message from December of 2019 that was an issue regarding the flowers.
Mr. Lederman, I have a question about that, because your first point in your table of contents is that the district court erred by admitting exhibits 2 through 11.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I usually think of evidentiary ruling as an abuse of discretion. I'm wondering what standard of review you think applies, since you said it was error.
Your Honor, I agree that it's an abuse of discretion standard that should apply to these HRO proceedings as well. That seems to be the standard for general evidentiary rulings when cases go to trial. And I think the same standard should apply here.
Counsel, if we just count up, I think your point is to talk about whether there's repeated incidents. Is that
yes?
So as I look at it, I thought the district court talked about the February 6, 2018 message, the October 15, 29 post-verdict message, the December 16, 2018 message, right? And those
yes.
are three,
yes.
three incidents. Can you, what do you have to say about, what are you telling us about whether those don't constitute them repeated incidents?
Your Honor, the point here is that if we consider these closely, first of all, the 2017 messages should not be considered. And that's one of our primary arguments, that the district court had taken the prior HRO evidence and kind of recycled it to create a new HRO. And so,
okay, but I think we started with, I think the district court started with the February 6, 2018.
Sure. And so okay. The 2018 message was the message that resulted in the criminal conviction. So that's one incident of, and that was just one message. So that cannot be construed as more than one incident of alleged harassment. So if we assume that that was a message that would qualify as harassment, we need one more in order for the new order to issue. And so our position is that we don't have one more, because the 2017 messages should not be considered under Roar versus Dunham.
So what about the October 15, 2019 message and the December 16, 2019 message?
And I will talk about those
okay.
here. So exhibit number one is the October 2019 message. This is the message immediately after the verdict in the criminal case. Your Honors, I would point the court to Ms. Peterson's own testimony at the HRO hearing. because that was one of her primary reasons for filing the new HRO. And so when she was asked, this is in the transcript, page 44. She was asked, so you would agree, Ms. Peterson, that this exhibit number one is actually child related. If we focus on what it says rather than what you think it says, if you look at the words, this is a child related message. Don't you agree? Her answer is, I agree.
And but so, Mr. Lederman, the district court rejected that. It said it was simply recycling the previous writing a book type message, and he couldn't be immunized simply by including the child's name in it. How did the district court err in making that, coming to that conclusion?
Your Honor, if Mr. Meyer thinks that this is a child-related message, and if the recipient, Ms. Peterson, also testifies under oath that she believes it's child-related, the district court erred by rejecting the testimony of the only two people who are in the best position to interpret what that message means. I'm aware that the district court decided that despite the fact that Mr. Meyer was trying to make it look like it was child-related, that it wasn't. But that contradicts Ms. Peterson's own testimony. She agreed that this is child-related. She also agreed in the same hearing that she would want to know if somebody, whether it's Mr. Meyer or somebody else, is going to write a book that somehow mentions or discusses their son, that this is something that she would want to know. And so that's the error, is that everyone who's actually involved in this case agrees that it's child-related besides the district court. And that's where the mistake happened, is the district court should have considered the testimony as opposed to its own interpretation and decided that that was a child-related message, not only based on what it says, but also based on what the parties allege it says.
It seems like you're saying that by, I think the child-related came up in terms of, well, the nature of the harassment, what his restrictions were. It had to be child related. But when the district court fined, you seem to be arguing that because the child, you know, there was an agreement that it was child related. In other words, it related to the child. There's mention of the child, that the district court clearly erred by looking in context and deciding that the intent was also to threaten some sort of expose about what respondent implies petitioner's misdeeds or mistreatment of him were. Why can't it be both related to the child and implicitly threatening to do an expose by reading a book or writing a book, excuse me?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that it can be both, but the issue that I think the court has to look at based on what the prior HRO prohibited, Mr. Meyer was allowed to communicate with Ms. Peterson through this Our Family Wizard application regarding child-related issues. And so I believe
the right. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, right. I'm sorry, is the audio bad? It sounds bad to me when I start talking. Right, the focus of whether there's a violation of the restrictions have to do with whether it's child-related. But the question here is whether there's harassment. And if the district court looks at context and says it's harassing because of the implication, in the writing of book, I don't know that it has to be bound cabined by that other question.
Maybe I misunderstood previously, Your Honor. Our position is that if the message is child related, that it cannot be harassment because the HRO permits child related communications. And so whether they are, polite or rude or something else, the issue isn't how it's going to be interpreted. The first question should be, is it child related? And if the answer is yes.
So are you saying that a message, if it can only be child related or not child related, it can't be child related and something else? Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, I'm saying that it can be, in a broader perspective, a message that Mr. Meyer sends to Ms. Peterson can be child related. And it can also be demeaning, for example, or abusive. But the first question should always be whether it's child-related. And if it is child-related, whether it's rude or whether it's nice or whether it's something else, that should not matter because that message is explicitly permitted by the HRO because it's child-related. So yes, it could be mean or demeaning, but as long as it's child-related, that is permitted pursuant to the age rule. As long as it's child related, then as long as it's sent through this Our Family Wizard application, those should be the first questions. And if the answers are yes, then the analysis should stop there, because you know, the tone of the message does not automatically make it not child related. And that's our point here. So it seems the district court read beyond what the parties thought and rejected their testimony. And that's where we find the district court erred.
What about the December 16th message? What's clearly erroneous about that finding?
This is the message pertaining to the flowers, where Ms. Peterson had sent him a Mr. Meyer thank you note about the flowers, and he responded, Your Honors, this is our view is that this is also a child-related message. You know, she talked about the flowers, he responded, but if the court would look to kind of the broader context of what's happening in that message, Mr. Meyer is once again tying this back to college.
Let me ask you this. When the district, when your client said that the petitioner is, and I'm quoting now, lying, hypocritical, deceitful, manipulative, mean, bitter, resentful, etc. person, what about that is child related?
Your Honor, I would ask the court to see, to look at the whole message rather than take parts of it, and the court will see the whole thing. We can look at the first sentence. He says, however, think how much more Colin would have been able to see his grandfather had you not kidnapped him from California. And so, yes, if we just look at that one sentence and if we don't see the whole message in context, then it seems like it's not child related. But if we look to the point that Mr. Meyer is trying to make here, what he's saying is that Ms. Peterson is lying, hypocritical, deceitful, and all these other things, and that all of these things have caused their son not to be able to see his grandfather. So this is also child-related in our view, if you consider the whole thing as opposed to reading sentences out of it that maybe don't pertain to the child directly. And that's what I was going to kind of say about that message, so I don't have any other comments about that one. And the last body of evidence that was...
Are you saying it's okay? And Judge Smith, I also am hearing feedback. I don't know what's going on. So are you saying that it's okay as long as he says something about Colin, he can say whatever else he wants in it because it was child related? I'm trying to understand the scope of your contention.
Your Honor, I think, no, we're not saying that. We're not saying that as long as Mr. Meyer inserts the word Colin into any message he sends, it automatically that's a child-related message. That's not the point. The point is to look at the entire message and the context and to try to understand what is the point that he's trying to get across here. And if we look at the entire message of this exhibit number two, the flower message, the point that he's trying to get across is that their son, Colin, is suffering as a result of these actions that he describes in detail of her being lying and hypocritical and everything else. So if that's all he said is that you're lying and hypocritical, and then that's it, then yeah, that would not be child-related. But he's making a point that because of her behavior, which he describes in detail, their child is suffering by not being able to see his family members. And that's the way that I think the district court should have interpreted the messages. And that's the way that we're asking this court to do that as well, because the ultimate goal is to look at the context. And if we do that, then we will see that this is also child-related message. The third set of evidence is exhibits 3 through 11. The district court itself in the new harassment restraining order, this is page number 8. The district court itself decided that, in my view, most of the 2020 messages petitioner offered as exhibits 3 through 11 probably fall just within the child-related issue. And so if we take all of this evidence together, you know, the 2017 messages should not be included in the analysis, period. Everything that I described about why the other messages are not child-related, and the district court, are child-related, and then the district court's analysis here that exhibits 3 through 11 are also just barely child-related, we don't have what's required for there to be harassment based on new incidents that happened since the last HRO.
So are you conceding then, Mr. Lederman, that there was no error in admitting those exhibits 3 through 11? Because that seems to be what you're arguing now, that even though they were admitted, the court found them to be child related, but that's not the way you brief that issue.
No, Your Honor, we're not conceding that those exhibits were properly admitted. These are two alternative arguments. Our first argument is that they should not be considered because they should not have been admitted.
Do you have any authority for that proposition? That you seem to claim that they were a discovery violation, but this is a special proceeding. It normally happens very quickly as designed by the statute, but for the four continuances granted to your client, this matter would have happened within a matter of a week or so and would have went to trial. There'd be no time for discovery. Can you point us to any authority that says somehow because there's an alleged discovery violation that's made here that the court somehow erred by admitting those?
Your Honor, I don't have any authority with regards to this particular issue. I don't believe that it's been decided. What I will say is that under Civil Rule of Civil Procedure 26, the harassment restraining proceedings are exempt from disclosures, from initial disclosures. I'm not aware of any other rules that exempt harassment proceedings from the remainder of the Rules of Civil Procedure. And yes, Your Honor is correct that typically these cases do progress fast and there would not be sufficient time for a discovery to happen. But that's not what happened here. But we did have plenty of time. Both sides were ultimately represented by counsel. And our position is that the court should look at the entire process of what happened. And if there was time for discovery, if both parties had plenty of time to gather and produce it, both parties had lawyers, under that specific circumstance, the discovery should have been produced. And that's our.
So there's no dispute that your client sent those messages or said those things and the court didn't rely on them. So why should we even consider it? It seems like you've made no showing of prejudice, even if there was error.
Your Honor, I would say that we would have had a better opportunity to prepare for the hearing had we had those in advance. I didn't know those were going to be admitted into evidence. Yes.
Did you ever ask your client if there were other? I mean, he could have told you about them.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But my focus for the hearing was to look at the petition that was filed and to defend the case based on the allegations in the petition. Could I have asked them to produce to me the whole body of their communications, between the petition and the hearing? Yes. But my goal was to focus on the petition, and that's reasonable because you expect that the case will be proven based on the allegations that the petitioner sets forth in the petition. I'm out of time, Your Honor, so I'll reserve the rest for the rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Dwayne Quam. I'm here today representing the respondent in this case, Emily Peterson. Ms. Peterson is respectfully requesting this court affirm the district court's decision for four reasons. First, the district court did not err by admitting exhibits 2 through 11 into evidence over appellant's objection. Second, the district court did not err in the issuing the two-year HRO on August 27, 2020. Third, the district court properly granted the new restraining order based on recent conduct by the appellant. And fourth, the HRO should not be reversed and vacated because it is supported by sufficient evidence of harassment. So my first point, Your Honors, the district court did not err in admitting exhibits 2 through 11. As it's already been discussed, it's an abuse of discretion standard here. As you know, the Supreme Court gives district courts a wide latitude as far as what they admit is into evidence. In this case, as already has been discussed as well, the appellant was not prejudiced as far as the exhibits. He had them. The district court discusses this in depth. He's the one who sent them. He knew what he wrote. Furthermore, Your Honors, appellant had these at the hearing and was able to cross-examine Ms. Peterson using them. If appellant had wanted to, he could have requested another continuance. He had already had four previous continuances. I don't know what one more would have done. He could have asked to be put at the bottom of the calendar. I believe this hearing was at the top of the calendar and there were others waiting. So he could have taken time to review those exhibits. I believe it was only about a page and a half of text messages. So it wasn't a whole lot. Moving on. This court also talked about this type of thing in a case called Yule v. Kleinbeck, where evidence of harassment occurring after a petition has been filed is still admissible. Okay, moving on to my second point, Your Honors. This court did not err by issuing a two-year HRO starting on August 27, 2020. So Minnesota Statute 609.748, Subdivision 5, Parent B, Parent 3, allows the court to grant a restraining order for up to 2 years. The statute is silent as far as when that two-year period starts. Subdivision 4, I believe, discusses the temporary HRO, which is ex parte, and that says, I believe in, give me one moment, Your Honors. Subdivision 4, Parent 2, Parent D, a temporary restraining order is in effect until the hearing is held. A hearing is held on the issuance of a restraining order under Subdivision 5. So the statute is silent as far as the when that two-year period should be measured by. And so that discretion seems to be left up to the district court itself. That temporary restraining order was put in place on December 23rd, 2019, and was in place until the issuance of the HRO by the district court on August 27th, 2020, which is when that two-year period was started. Moving on to my third point, Your Honors, the district court properly granted the new restraining order based on appellant's recent conduct. As it's already been discussed, there were two text messages, specifically October 15th, 2019, and December 16th, 2019, the district court references. On appellant addendum 10, it is the second and third full paragraphs of that page. The previous text messages from 2017 to 2018, which were used for previous HROs, was simply used for context, Your Honors. It was to show that this same conduct had been going on for years and to give a full background of why these messages were harassing. Moving on to my fourth and final point, Your Honors, the HRO should not be reversed and vacated because it was supported by sufficient evidence of harassment. Looking at the October 16, 2019 text message, it was similar to both the October 5th, 2017 text message and the February 6th, 2018 text message. That respondent.
Can I ask, counsel, is the February 6, 2018 message not a message that should be, are you saying that's not a message that can be considered for this new HRO? Was that subject to the previous one?
No, Your Honor. I'm simply saying that is the October 15, 2019 message is similar to that as far as the context.
Okay. I just heard earlier when you were talking about the messages that are relevant for the second HRO, I didn't hear you mention the February 6, 2018 message, and I wondered if that's because it shouldn't be.
No, Your Honor. I believe it could be. I was specifically focusing on the 2019 text messages because they seem to be more relevant to what has been discussed. But I would agree that February 2018 message could be used because it is a prior violation of an HRO.
Mr. Quam, are you aware of any authority that says in the context of a hearing on an HRO that the court is limited to only considering specific instances that are alleged in the petition?
I am not, Your Honor. And I believe, as I stated in my first point, this court's ruling in Yule v. Kleinbeck actually discusses this and states that harassment occurring after the petition is filed is still admissible. All right. So back to the October 16, 2019 text message. As I said, the previous text messages were discussed by the court are also are given context to this message as well as the others, and in the context as a whole, the kind of conduct that is appellant has been taking part in. Respondent testified that yes, she believed it may be child related, but just because it's child related doesn't mean that it's not harassing as well. I believe the district court talks about this in appellate addendum 10, the second full paragraph. On to the December 15, 2019 text message. This text message starts off okay, and I believe the district court says that. If it had stopped at the beginning, I don't think there'd be an issue or a question about it, but because it It does divulge into name calling. I believe that shows clear harassment. The district court also discussed that. And as I said, appellant addendum 10, third full paragraph. Just because the appellant uses the child's name, it does not insulate him from harassing the respondent in this case. Your Honors, for all these reasons, as well as the reasons outlined in the brief, Ms. Peterson respectfully asks this court to affirm the district court's decision. It looks like I have plenty of extra time. I don't know if there's any other questions of me. No? Okay. Thank you, Your Honors, for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points I want to make regarding this issue of restarting the HRO 8 months later. I just want to address that briefly. The counsel is correct that the statutes do permit the district court to enter a two-year HRO as of the date of the hearing. If there is a temporary one, then we transition to a permanent one. The statute does permit for a permanent two-year HRO, but I would suggest that the facts of this case are a little bit different because what we do have is a lengthy delay of 8 months. And so Mr. Meyer requested a hearing, and I'm not saying that was anyone's fault. You know, we made a continuance request, and then I believe we got delayed because of the pandemic substantially longer after that. So I'm not blaming anyone for that, but the bottom line is that there was a lengthy delay here. It wasn't anyone's fault. And essentially he was penalized with an extra 8 months of a harassment restraining order just because he had asked for a hearing. If he had just left that issue alone, the order would have expired sooner. And it's further our position that there was nothing in the record to justify that extension, that there was nothing going on, you know, during that 8 month delay that would justify the district court to say, well, this deserves an extra 8 months. So given the facts, our position is that that's something the district court should have considered and that the two-year period should have run based on the temporary HRO, which would have expired in December of 2021 as opposed to August of 2022, which is what we have now.
Counsel, if I may interrupt you, I mean, besides sort of your, what sounds like sort of a fairness argument or something, what actually is the violation by the district court to have it that run from the date of the, from 2 years from the date of the decision?
Your Honor, I would say again, that's an abuse of discretion, that if the district court under these circumstances was going to add an extra 8 months to the temporary restraining order, there should have been some kind of a basis for that, something in the record saying that, you know, during the delay, that there was more harassment, for example, or that while they're waiting for the hearing, there was more messages with harassment, and we don't have that here. And so it's an abuse of discretion in our view to add that to the HRO period when there isn't any sort of evidence to justify that. And then with regards to the issue of the discovery violation, Ms. Peterson's position is that obviously their position is that the evidence should have been admitted. It's also their position that it was, that admission was harmless because Mr. Meyer knew about the messages he sent them, so it should not be a surprise. Again, he did know about the messages he did send them, but I think it's an opportunity for the court to look at how, to provide some guidance about how these things work. So even if the court ultimately decides that the messages, that the admission of the messages was harmless, the court should still, or could still offer some guidance to the district courts about how these proceedings should move forward, especially in a situation where we have time to do discovery, when there is time to exchange documents, and when both parties are represented by counsel, and when there is a substantial delay between the request for the hearing and the actual hearing, this court should provide guidance that discovery rules should be followed, and that if a party makes a request for discovery, that should be responded to, especially if the party that doesn't respond intends to introduce the evidence that was requested at the hearing. I don't have any other comments unless the court has questions.
No, I just had one. I assume there was no motion to compel responses to discovery. Is that correct?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And I didn't know there was going to be more discovery. I came into the hearing thinking that we're going to be limited to the things that were discussed in the petition. So.
Thank you, counsel. Seeing no other questions, thank you both for your arguments. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay.